Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am deeply grateful to be with you on this 21st day of March 2020. We're going to look at thoughts. I'm up at Mount Madonna right now. I will be doing a beautiful retreat for my students. We're working on the state of love. It's going to be interesting to move towards this experience that is, well, to say the least, it's chilling when you start to think about the idea of how unloving we have been in our life and what we've thought love is. It is always interesting to me. Few people ever really want to know about the state of love. They assume it is something they naturally get, and it isn't. It truly isn't. So we'll be working on that this week at Mount Madonna. And maybe one day some of you who are brave, bold, daring enough to explore beyond the confines of the pedestrian mentality that most of us live by all of our life and cheat ourselves out of the beauty of life, we'll want to maybe explore beyond that a little bit. I want to thank my sponsors for their beautiful gifts, their donations that make all this possible. This program that you are listening to is there simply because of the kindness, the generosity, and the loving support of my sponsors. Without their gifts, it would not happen. And if you are enjoying any of this radio stuff that I do, or the TV programs that I offer, or anything that I give to you via Aspire, I hope you will help us support it by becoming a sponsor. Everything costs money. You have to understand that. Everything. No matter what we do, no matter what we do on the internet or here on the radio or on TV, it all costs money. People need to be paid. And for that, I can only turn to you. You're the ones that find this of value or of worth, and I hope that you do. And those of you who do, I mean, you send me beautiful questions and such. I would hope that you would eventually see the value of the bigger picture here and come and be a sponsor with us and help us help others. This whole thing of Aspire is simply service to humankind. My work at hospice is supported by my sponsors, by people like you, the TV programs, people like you, radio programs, people like you, everything we do, people like you who are listening. So please help us. Not a lot of people like to give anymore, and for obvious reasons, I can understand. But these same people, it's really interesting, will give to political things, you know, support this guy or that gal or whatever. And yeah, I don't know. How long does it take a person to live to find out it just doesn't matter? It's all going down the tube anyway. And the only thing you have left is to transcend this whole thing, to transcend your entire life and come to a different place where love can reach you. It's a very, very important thing. Honestly, it is the only meaning to life, and it won't matter who's president or who's not, or who gets this and who doesn't get that. The only thing that will matter when you leave this planet, or even living on this planet, will be, how did I love and what kept me from my journey of life? That is the big one. And if you think love has to do with emotionality, let's get into the questions. We're going to talk about thoughts. The first question comes from Terrence, and Terrence asks, a person can have thoughts about anything, both good, and then he says bad. Does that make them real? Terrence. A thought is only real. First of all, thinking is primitive. I just want to say that to you right up front. Most people would not say such an outrageous statement as that, but it is true. Thoughts are primitive. You're right. Terrence, you can have thoughts about anything, both good, both bad. What makes a thought real? Well, if it's in your head, Is it not real to you? It may not be real to me, but it seems real to you. Reality is contained within the thoughts we can possess. And typically, thoughts possess us. We don't possess them. We create them. For sure, we create them. But they eventually overtake us, and they possess us. They overtake us with all of the stuff that is important to them, like right, wrong, good, bad, moral instinct, things like that. It's interesting. We can have these quote-unquote moral instincts that we think are important to our life and then turn around and then break those instincts or those patterns or beliefs in just a brief moment to sustain our own morality. It is very ill. We have a lot of ill states of consciousness, of mind, I should say. And we miss so much of our life based on that. Can a person have thoughts about anything? Yes. And doesn't that make them reality to you? Yes. There are many people who have mental illness running around, and all sorts of mental illnesses. Narcissism is one of the biggest ones right now that I see out there in the world, and people have this narcissistic idea that they know everything, that their mind can know what's good and bad and right and wrong, and that they are special individuals, and they don't need to explore, meditate, or work on themselves at all. And not at all, because they're above that. This is, believe it or not, the pedestrian mentality at work. And it's the ego. And the ego is constantly manufacturing, Terrence, all sorts of beliefs and evidences that say this is this and this is that, and you should believe this. And the ego is built from my DNA and my genetic nature. So in my DNA, I am hearing, you must survive, you must survive, you must survive. And then it goes to my genetics as I look to my genetics to fulfill this deep urging to survive. And my genetics are filled with all sorts of people, people that I never knew existed. I'm really making this, Dr. Seuss kind of simple. All sorts of people that are in my biology, in my body, living there, both in an active way and in a way that is asleep. Let's just say that, dormant for a while. Then something will frighten my body, frighten my emotions, and all of a sudden I will go into some genetic. Now, which one it will be, I do not know. That's the problem. But whatever that genetic disposition that is, let's say, spurred on or inspired by my fear, my emotionality, will become a thought. I will start developing thoughts based around that genetic disposition. Now, every thought, good or bad, as you said in your question, seems logical and reasonable to me. Oh, I could do this, or I could do that. Or to some people will go to extremes. I will hurt this person or whatever. Manipulation, all sorts of, shall we say, scenarios that look like daytime soap opera TV things that we do. How many times, just ask yourself this, Terrence, how many times have you done something you knew you wouldn't want done to you? You really wouldn't want it done to you. But you did it to another person because you thought they deserved it. Probably a great deal. Now, this could go into, quote, good thoughts, as you put it, or bad thoughts. Thoughts that you knew would not be very kind. It wouldn't be loving. You wouldn't want it done unto you, as it were. But you do it anyway. And why do you do it? What is that impulse that makes you do it, that makes it all right? It's the combination of the fear of a lack of survival and the genetic pull to do something in your body, my body, that makes impulse possible, makes it seem logical, makes it seem reasonable, makes it seem okay. Even though you wouldn't want it done to you, it's okay to do it to someone else. This is the kind of influence we are guided by as a people. And it does nothing but tear apart our lives. And there is nothing I or anyone else can say to you to stop you. To say, no, don't do that. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That simple little teaching, how powerful it is and how few can do it. How few are willing to do it. And it hurts. It hurts the world. It hurts you. It hurts everyone. So you have to look at it from that point of view. You ask, a person can have thoughts about anything good and bad. Does that make it reality? It will seem like reality to you. What might seem kind to you may not seem so kind to me. Just may not seem so kind. You have to look at it from the point of view of where you're at within yourself. And the quality of our thoughts determines how we manage our emotions and put into action our emotions through acts of either loving kindness or ruthless despair. And that's up to you. You have to manage that. And if you have no premise within you to go further and deeper than just logic and reasoning, I've had many people in my life, probably like you, Terrence, who said they loved you, but you knew they didn't. You just knew. You knew that, this is not true. And then you find out later their actions, how they react to you, their vengeance that they lay on you. And then you just shake your head and you go, yeah, I knew. I knew this person. When you truly love someone, you would never, ever lift a hand to hurt them. Not ever. For whatever reason. And always remember that. What Buddha said is true. See how you love and what keeps you from your journey. Please forgive me. Namaste. Next one comes from Raymond. He does not tell me where he lives. I can't trust my mind to be happy. Is there a way I could be happy and I can train my mind to find some kind of happiness in this world? Raymond. Raymond. Happiness is a quality of consciousness. Consciousness is something you and I develop through no mind, a mind not seeking to consider what is good and bad, right and wrong. Consciousness is found in meditation, in the totality of a silence that lives within us all. And to find that silence, it is very, very difficult, very difficult, to find inner peace when I'm not in silence at my core. If the core of me is not in silence, then I have no means for happiness or joy, inspiration, insight. I have none of that. So I have to ask myself, what is it that I call happy? Is it for you being carefree? Never having a problem, never having any difficulties in this lifetime, in this world? What is it? What is it that you would define as the state of happiness? This is the real question. If I continue to think that happy depends upon getting what I want, to pleasure my senses, to appease my ego, I will miss. I will miss everything that is important, everything that is valuable, everything that is beautiful. It takes a great deal of living in this world, in the state of human futility, to learn just that basic lesson. It takes a great deal. No, you can't trust your mind. You can't trust it to be happy, because happiness is not in the confines of the mind. Happiness is the consciousness to set yourself free from the mind, no longer allowing it to be the dominant figure in your life. And thoughts being obsolete after a while, when you start to really look at your and my thoughts, we can only have so many thoughts. Look at the range of your thinking. How far can your thinking go from A to B? It can't go very far at all. It only thinks in terms of, well, that makes sense and this is good, or that makes sense and that is bad. And that's as far as it can go. Good, bad, right, wrong, over and over and over again, until the confines of my mind are just contained in my survival. And when I'm living just for my survival, I am living in a selfishness that is incredibly stupid. It will make me do very stupid things. I have done it myself. I know it well. But I also know the other end now, much bigger, much broader. And it is much more important to forgive and let go. It is much more important to live your life for the sake of restitution. It is much more important to find the meaning of your life contained within yourself. What is the meaning of your life? Raymond, that's what you have to find. Don't trust your mind to give you meaning. Look deep within yourself, beyond the confines of your genetic mentality. Go deeper, go further. What is it that makes life possible in me? What am I here for? What sustains wisdom? Don't be fooled by thoughts. Don't let your thoughts side path you into beliefs that are manufactured by the old el ego. Don't do that. It hurts when I do that, Henny Youngman said. Then don't do that. Just simply go further and deeper. Find your emptiness. If you don't find your emptiness, you will not find the meaning beyond right and wrong, good and bad. There is a teaching, there is a life beyond right and wrong and good and bad. And when you and I are in the posture of that kind of lovingness, that kind of goodness, that kind of mercy, then things start to change within us, not in the world, in us. And it is a very powerful moment when you suddenly realize your life has nothing to do with the thoughts of being happy that you have. It is more important to see the way of that, the truth of that, and how that works inside you than anything else. If you can understand what I just said, if you can hear the light inside you and follow it, no matter where it may take you inside you, it may take you on some pretty interesting journeys, all of them based in building a sense of forgiveness within you, a sense of compassion and love for everything that you've ever done, and even an insight into how to make restitution with your life. If you can do that, you have changed your life immensely. All of us who have lived in our body for many years and now have discovered something else, have made mistakes and need to make restitution for our mistakes. We do that in very simple gestures. From how you eat your food, to how you greet a friend, to how maybe you have to deal with someone who thinks of you as their enemy, to wiping your behind. It all is the same. Forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. To be mindful and gentle with everything. to want a love that is greater than what we think love is. Huge thing to be able to recognize. Raymond, thank you for your beautiful question. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question from Tina in Los Angeles, she tells me. Exactly what are thoughts? I mean, I really don't know, but I have a lot of them, Tina. Tina, you must be very intelligent. You really must be. It's really a great question. Thoughts, well, they come, they go. They're aberrations of my ego. They're the basic whim of my genetic nature, and I'm getting a whiff of them all the time. Your ability to think, the quality of your thoughts are dependent upon the state of your emotionality, the state of your genetic disposition. If you take away emotion, if you can rise above your emotions, then you will start to understand what a thought is. It is merely the whim of a motion that needs attention or wants attention, and that's about as far as it goes. Now, when you're sitting there and you get these whims from your emotionality that are saying, you need to get this, you need to get that, I'm bored, I need this, I don't feel loved, I blah, 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 blah. If you can examine them without emotionality, you will see exactly what they are. They're aberrations. They don't really exist. They're like ghosts. They just don't exist. And the only thing that makes them exist is, in my case, Greg's attention. If you train Tina, as I have Greg, not to give them attention, not to impulse them, not to think that, oh, these are very important thoughts that I have about you and this and that and over here and over there, and build some kind of belief system and philosophy about what you think is good and bad, right and wrong. If you are willing to drop all of that, then something of the other shore might be able to reach you very quickly. I've had students find that gap, that pause between their thoughts. You have Vipassana meditation at our retreats that we do, and every so often there'll be a student who gets it. Just all of a sudden, bingo, they see that gap, that pause. And it is very beautiful to them, but it also puts them in a quandary. Now what do I do? Now how do I think? And I keep telling them, don't think, just keep following that gap, that pause in you, just be there. And they're afraid they're going to turn into, I don't know, maybe some kind of, I don't know, idiot or something. They're so afraid. They think that it might make them mentally ill, I've even heard. They already are mentally ill. That's what I keep saying to them. You are mentally ill. A troubled mind cannot meditate. Only an untroubled mind. And if I have a troubled mind, it's because I'm sustaining some kind of false premise in my life, falsity, some kind of belief that has nothing to do with the basic reality of life and love. You have to want love more than wanting what you think is love. It is the love that lives within you that makes all this happen. And so, Tina, what is a thought? It does not really exist, only in my mind, and whatever's in my mind is cultivated and calculated and sustained through the stature of my ego, and that's about it. Now, for a lot of people, that's enough for them to live in, but for you, my dear, I hope it's not enough. I hope you are considering something deeper and more profound in your life than just the arrogance of a mind that is only thinking narcissistically of itself. I'm out of here. Thank you for your beautiful question, Tina. Please forgive me. Namaste. Well, there you are, thoughts. May this serve you well. This was a very important Aspire radio program, and I hope you could play with it. We're at Mount Madonna right now, and by the magic of radio, I'll be back on the air tomorrow. These are always pre-recorded. So anyway, have fun. Have a beautiful day. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.